Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from London, England, this is my wont, and just now it can be told, time, since I haven't stunk up the rehearsals or previews, I can tell you that tomorrow night, I join Maureen Lipman, an English national treasure, and Oliver Cotton on stage at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, of all places, for the opening night of a new play called Daytona, written by Oliver Cotton, for the next 7 weeks. So if you're in London, come on down. Say hi, except keep your mouth shut. And speaking of London, where would you think the highest concentration of nitrogen dioxide in the world is? Some city in China, right? Mexico City? Tokyo? The once impressive shopping street of Oxford Street in London. It has the highest concentration of a toxic pollutant that can trigger asthma and heart attacks, according to the Sunday Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. A monitoring station installed in the famous shopping street, famous now for tat as well as other things, found high levels of nitrogen dioxide. Average NO2 levels of 135 micrograms per cubic meter of air. You have one of those meters. In the year to date, more than three times the European Union's limit. This is an average which includes night times when traffic is lower, meaning the pollution experienced by shoppers and workers during the day is much higher than 135 micrograms per cubic meter. In March, it reached a peak of 463. Is that possible? If you walk down the street now, as I did coming here for about a block, there are virtually no cabs or buses because much of the day they don't allow them. So those buses and cabs must be working very extra hard during those hours where they're here. The average levels are higher than those recorded in Chinese and Indian cities. However, London has lower levels of particulates. The uniquely high levels are due to Oxford Street being almost permanently congested, says the Times, with buses and taxis. Says David Carlisle, who researches motor vehicle emissions and urban air quality at King's College London, to my knowledge, this is the highest in the world in terms of both hourly and annual mean. All right, then. Come for the shopping, stay for the nitrogen dioxide. But lest you think that London's the only city with bragging rights in the world, we're not number one. Deadline Washington, and you know, ladies and gentlemen, I wouldn't share this with you, except that it does fit into the regular feature of the program called We're Not Number One, because I have very little faith in or concern for polls, but this reports on a poll by the esteemed Gallup organization. Fewer Americans are satisfied with the freedom to choose what they do with their lives compared with just 7 years ago, dropping 12 percentage points from 91% in 2006 to 79% last year. In the same period, the percentage of Americans dissatisfied with the freedom to choose what they do with their lives more than doubled from 9 to 21%. Gallup asks people in more than 120 countries each year whether they're satisfied or dissatisfied with the freedom to choose what they do with their lives. In 2006, the U.S. ranked among the highest in the world. After 7 years and the 12-point decline, the U.S. no longer makes the top quartile worldwide. We're, I think, number 29. Only 10 countries had declines as large or larger than the decrease seen in the United States. That distinguished roll call includes Egypt, Yemen, Pakistan, Cyprus, and Venezuela. We're not number one. And, ladies and gentlemen, it's always possible to be shocked at the obvious. Take the number two official of the World Football League, you know, the one that runs the World Cup, FIFA. Ignoring the corruption scandal that's been spread across the pages of the London Sunday Times for past month, he says he's amazed by the levels of drunkenness in Brazil's World Cup stadiums. This revives the debate over whether alcohol sales should have been allowed at the games in the first place. In an interview with Brazil's sports television network, Jerome Valky, he's number two to Sepp Blatter, he acknowledged that, quote, maybe there were too many people who were drunk, unquote, at the matches. Well, sir, what would be the right number of drunks? Do we have? And pointed to the connections between inebriation and violence. Well, that's refreshing. Brazil banned alcohol sales at soccer matches in 2003 in an attempt to curb fan violence. But what would interfere with that? Budweiser, a major sponsor of the World Cup. They and FIFA insisted that Brazil lift the alcohol ban in order to get the rights to host the month-long event. Blame Bud. Hello, welcome to the show. And drink up. From the home of nitrogen dioxide pollution, London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news of the atom. Our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Our friend Addie the atom is back. Did you have a good vacation? What? You don't sound too enthusiastic.
Yeah, that's all right. I got drunk a lot.
Would you go to Brazil?
No, stayed home.
When it comes to New York's Indian Point nuclear station, you've heard of it, right?
Yeah.
The calculations of some earthquake scientists are shifting, and they're not sure if government regulators are keeping up.
They never do.
Federal regulators in May ordered in-depth analyses of the danger earthquakes pose to Indian Point and 20 other nuclear sites in the central and eastern United States.
That's not where they have earthquakes. Come on. Who are you kidding?
I wouldn't kid an atom. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is trying to figure out whether the plants are at greater risk than was thought at the time of their construction.
Of course they are. What's the point of time passing if it couldn't be a greater risk?
Good question. The NRC's current position is that there's no need to worry. It says the plants, quote, have substantial safety margin above their design's anticipated hazards and are safe for continued operation while more work is done. Indian Point's detailed risk analysis is due in 3 years.
Plenty of time. Relax.
Lyman Sykes, a seismologist at Columbia University, doubts the new analysis will lead to anything. The chances that New York City and its environs will see a big earthquake haven't changed since 1962 when the first Indian Point reactor powered up. In fact, says Sykes, the earthquake hazard is the same today as when Henry Hudson sailed up the Hudson River in 1609.
And his atomic plant didn't blow up?
No, it didn't. The understanding of that hazard by Sykes and other scientists, though, has changed. Sykes was lead author of a study in 2008 that found quakes endanger New York more than previously thought.
Blame that on Lorne Michaels?
No, I don't. That study uncovered a fault line that runs from Stanford, Connecticut to Peekskill, New York, on the Hudson River just north of Indian Point. Scientists have since then gathered new data from a major earthquake in Virginia that shook much of the eastern seaboard. That quake was felt so strongly in New York, the air control tower at Kennedy Airport was evacuated. Several buildings in Washington were badly damaged. You may recall the Washington Monument was closed for repairs.
I thought it was cosmetic.
The quake also shut down a nuclear plant in Virginia, about 11 miles from its epicenter. The NRC found the frequency of the quake's vibrations were greater than the North Anna plant was designed to withstand. That was the first instance of that. Studies of the Virginia quake added to scientists' belief that eastern quakes, though infrequent, are dangerous when they occur.
Different accent?
No. Eastern earthquakes are richer in high frequencies than anticipated by the original design of Indian Point and other reactors in the eastern central U.S., says Sykes.
High frequencies are good, right?
No. It's a problem because Indian Point and other reactors were designed according to standards based on California earthquakes, which are stronger but involve less shaking.
The laid-back California quakes. I love them.
The NRC says it recognizes the issue. It says its reviews of Indian Point and other reactors will weigh new research on ground vibration and identify if any modifications need to be made to increase the ability of certain components to withstand the higher ground motion. Once these reviews are completed, NRC will use this information to determine if additional regulatory actions or plant modifications are necessary.
So, relax?
Yes. Indian Point is protected not just from the strongest earthquake that has happened, but from the strongest earthquake that is possible, says the spokesman for its plant. Put your money down, baby, right now. I recall language like that being spoken by the United States Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, but this is a nuclear plant.
The risk has to do with the population and structures that are at risk from a certain amount of shaking, says Sykes. Of course, New York City has a much higher risk today than it had in 1609. Indian Point is closer to more people than any other reactor in the country.
If you can shake it here, you can shake it anywhere.
Cute. Dateline Brattleboro, Vermont. Yankee nuclear power plant will be allowed to continue discharging millions of gallons of heated water into the Connecticut River until a plant shuts down later this year, despite its owner, Entergy Nuclear, relying on flawed science.
Well, flawed science is still science.
Yeah. Under new conditions included in the permit, Entergy might have to curb its discharge, pardon the expression, this fall so that the temperature of the Connecticut River does not climb any higher than 69 degrees. The current limit is 71. The Connecticut River is heated as part of the process to keep the reactor cool.
Kind of a heat transfer deal?
Mm-hmm. The river water never comes in direct contact with radioactive materials. Environmental groups had fought Entergy for years because the effect of the higher temperatures on fish, particularly the migrating American shad.
Think of Shad Row.
Ooh, you went Cole Porter on us there. During the spring and the river's biota. The permit expired 9 years ago but had been grandfathered by the state as several Clean Water Act challenges were settled in federal court. Have you been grandfathered lately?
No.
The permit makes clear that if Vermont Yankee wasn't shutting down at the end of the year, its thermal discharge of the Connecticut River would have to change. Think of Shadrow. Words to live by, Adi. Thank you. Clean, cheap, safe, too memorable to meter, our friend the atom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, listen to the warm, won't you? News of the warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The high expense, this is from Oil Price magazine, which you, contrary to the name, is not, in my reading of it from time to time, you know, the kid throws it on the lawn sometimes, the sprinkler gets it, not anti-green energy, but this particular piece of news will be cause for pause. The high expense of installing solar technologies made cheap, mass-produced Chinese panels commonplace, with seven of the world's top 10 solar panel makers hailing from China. New research, however, has shown how the severely polluting processes used to manufacture these panels in China are outweighing the environmental benefits the panels provide. Dr. Fenqi Yu. Well, sorry, I didn't even know you were offended. From the Argonne National Laboratory, estimated the environmental cost of Chinese-made solar panels is about twice that of those made in Europe. It's become increasingly clear that in order to maintain their competitiveness, certain Chinese suppliers are cutting corners that create risks for their employees, clients, and people who live near their plants. In a survey of 50 Chinese factories for the last 2 years, Solar Buyer found defect rates for solar panels ranging from 5.2 to 22%. Many of these stem from the use of cheap, substandard coating materials that save money but have been shown to be a fire hazard. An investigation by PV Evolution Labs in California found industry leaders subcontracting production to small Chinese plants where they had no real control. Given that the manufacturing of PV panels involves the use of the most potent greenhouse gas in existence, sulfur hexafluoride, as well as carcinogenic chemicals like cadmium lead and cadmium VI, any lapses in standards can have costly results. Starting in 2011, reports of dying fish. These fish are just too sensitive to live, don't you think? And children with excessive levels of lead in their blood led hundreds of protesters to storm a factory in China's Zhejiang province, only to be violently repulsed by riot police. Protests against industrial pollution are hardly uncommon in China, but the targeting of solar panel makers was new. It's new. You know, still on the subject of the warm, we do care about the penguins, don't we? They're cute. They're easy to animate. So we might want to save them, or just animate them more. An international team of scientists studying emperor penguin populations across Antarctica finds the animals in danger of dramatic declines in population by the end of the century due to climate change. The study published in Nature Climate Change finds the emperor penguin, quote, fully deserving of endangered species status due to climate change, unquote. The emperor penguin is currently under consideration for that status. The study was conducted by a biologist with Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and colleagues at a French Center for Atmospheric Research. Emperor penguins are heavily dependent on sea ice for their livelihoods and therefore are sensitive to changes in sea ice concentration. SIC, there's a new one for you, new meaning for SIC. The researchers' analysis of the global continent-wide emperor penguin population incorporates current and projected future sea ice concentration declines and determined that all of the colonies would be in decline, many by more than 50% by the end of the century. If sea ice declines at the rates projected by the IPCC climate models and continues to influence emperor penguins as it did in the second half of the 20th century in the study area of Terre et de Lys, at least two-thirds of the colonies are projected to have declined by greater than 50% from their current size by 2100, said the lead researcher. None of the colonies, even the southernmost locations in the Ross Sea, will provide a viable refuge by the end of the 21st century. So animate them now, before we forget what they look like. To limit climate change to 2 degrees Celsius, low-carbon energy options will need additional investments of about $800 billion a year globally from now to the middle of the century. That's according to a new study published in the journal Climate Change Economics. Much of that capital could come from shifting subsidies and investments away from fossil fuels and associated technologies. Worldwide, subsidies for fossil fuels currently amount to around $500 billion a year. So just $300 billion in new spending, and we could do it if we got rid. We know that if we want to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, we need to drastically transform our energy system, says researcher David McCollum, who led the study. This is a comprehensive analysis to show how much investment capital is needed to successfully make that transition. This is part of a larger European Union research project examining the implications and implementation needs of climate policies to get down to 2 degrees Celsius. Investments in clean energy currently total around $200 to $250 billion a year. Scenarios show that with climate policies currently in the books, this is likely to grow to around $400 billion. However, the amount needed to limit climate change to 2 degrees amounts to around $1,200 billion total. So let's do the math. The energy investments needed to address climate change continue to be an area of large uncertainty. No kidding, Department. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, time for me to read the trades for you. From NickyFink.com, which is a trade publication and website covering the show business, we learn just exactly how much the chief executives of the major show business corporations make. This only seems fair since they delight in telling you from time to time how much the talent makes, or some version thereof. So here we go. And there's some surprises here. Last year, the CEOs who run major U.S. media companies made more than the chiefs of automobile companies, energy companies, finance industries, and other sectors that have far more impact on the economy, according to NickyFink.com. Quoting the AP, six of the country's 10 highest paid CEOs come from media. You'll be surprised who's at the top. Viacom and CBS executive chairman Sumner Redstone made $93 million last year, an 80% increase over the previous year. CBS's Les Moonves made $65.6 million. Philippe Doman of Viacom made $37.2 million. Disney's Bob Iger, $34.3 million. David Zaslav, head of the Discovery Channels, $33.3 million. You waiting for a name here? Time Warner's Jeff Bukas rhymes with $32.5 million. Comcast's Brian Roberts, $31.4 million. NBC Universal's Steve Burke, who works for Brian Roberts, $31.1 million. Gets $300,000 less than his boss. Chris Albrecht of the Starz Network, $30.4 million. That's enough to pay for a lot of new girlfriends. Viacom's Thomas Dooley, $28.9 million. And then Rupert Murdoch, $28.9 million. As if that's not bad enough, this week, a jury convicted Andy Coulson. Well, actually, last week, Andy Coulson was convicted of phone hacking. He was former editor of the News of the World newspaper, owned by Rupert Murdoch, since shuttered in the wake of the phone hacking scandal. He was this week sentenced to 18 months in jail, amid reports both that Rupert Murdoch is going to be interviewed by authorities over here, if he hasn't already, in connection with continuing probes into the phone hacking scandal and the bribery, possible, alleged bribery of public officials, which could trigger investigations in both Britain and the United States into violations of corporate anti-bribery laws. The former Nice Corp was split into two companies last year, partially to try to insulate the American company from any consequences of the British phone hacking scandal. Some reasons, perhaps, for the crocodile to shed some tears.
Foes. He'll wipe his eyes and hold his nose. He'll learn to pronounce the word Apollo Joyce. But don't stand too close. Oh no. When the crocodile sky. too close. Oh no. When the crocodile cries, crocodile cries. When the crocodile cries, crocodile cries. So nobody's left but the kith and kin. They're still reassured by the old croc's grin. But even they may be in for a big surprise.
Now, news of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, and the Church of England is meeting this month to consider ratifying a new baptism service, which has been tested at certain parishes over the past year. As a result of those tests, it has reinstated the word sin into the service. There was backlash from parishes who complained that the new wording was bland, dumbed down, and nothing short of dire. The church will press ahead, however, with plans to banish references to the devil from the new service, the new baptism service. Most clergy had found it much easier to ask parents and godparents to make vows which do not mention Satan. That's according to an official explanation sent out to members of the church's general synod. It also noted, however, that several of those consulted regretted the loss of the devil in the service. The current service has the priest asking the parents and godparents, "Do you reject the devil and all rebellion against God?" To which they reply, "I reject them." At least they hope they do. The priest then asks, "Do you renounce deceit and corruption of evil?" And they renounce them. During the testing this year, at more than 500 parishes, an alternative version replaced the questions by a pledge to reject evil and its empty promises. Now, of course, there's been reaction from inside the church to these developments, but we have reaction today on our newsmaker line from another source who's obviously got skin in this game, speaking to us today. We do not have our usual guest on such subjects, Satan himself, but he has apparently dispatched to speak with us on our newsmaker line his son, Satan Jr. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Harry, how are you?
Good.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. do I call you Satan or Junior? Or?
You can call me anything you like, just don't call collect.
You do have a devilish sense of humor.
Thanks. So do you.
Thank you. So why wasn't your dad on the call today? Is there a problem?
Well, sir, there's no problem at all. Everything's fine here in hell.
Oh, good. Or
bad. Yeah, this is a very busy time of year down here.
Really?
Dad's busy with Wimbledon and NBA free agency.
Wait. Hold on.
What?
Your dad is involved in Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Why do you think Andy Murray lost?
All right. And the NBA free agency?
Sure.
What is he?
Well, ask yourself, if teams are paying way too much money for marginal talent, whose work is that?
Hmm, interesting. All fits together nicely. So
yeah.
Now, before we get to the subject of this new liturgical service in the Church of England,
sure.
I think here at Le Chaudhome, among other places, had no idea that the Supreme Evil One had any issue at all, let alone a son,
well,
let alone a junior.
We try to keep our name, he does, out of the gossip, or as you call it in England, the tittle-tattle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, his private life is exactly that. And but I'm not the first, but he was proud enough of me when I came along that he called me Junior.
So your name is Satan Junior?
That's part of my name.
Oh, there's a story there. What's the rest of it?
Well, Dad was, as you may know, a big fan of Vegas, Las Vegas, and all the talent that came out of there in the 1950s and 60s.
I didn't know that.
So, have you ever heard of the Will Maston Trio?
Sure.
Yeah. He was a huge fan of theirs. Huh? He used to follow their act.
Wow.
And so he named me Sammy Satan Jr.
In honor of Sammy Davis Jr.?
I guess. We don't talk about it much.
Well, okay. Well.
But when I got old enough, I just dropped the Sammy because it sounded, I don't know.
Too Vegas?
Too old school.
Yeah. Not a lot of Sammys running around these days.
Yeah.
So, Satan Jr., what is the devil's position, your family's position on this change in the baptism service of the Church of England?
Well, we at the House of Satan believe that this is a wrong-headed move. We understand it because, obviously, it's in the Church's interest to, we were a scare object for centuries.
Sure.
And it would drive people into the Church that way. Oh, stay away from Satan. Come on to the Church and the cleansers or whatever.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, they're having their own marketing difficulties. Hard to get people into the pews on a Sunday when there's football and golf and everything.
The show.
And so I think they don't want to scare people.
Uh-huh.
And they don't even want to admit that there's an alternative now.
Uh-huh.
It's, it's church or nothing.
Yeah.
And we think that's bad it's certainly bad for our business.
Uh-huh.
But it's bad, I think, for the world as a whole. Because if people aren't aware of the works of the devil and his minions.
Yeah.
And I proudly count myself as probably his chief minion.
His filet minion.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that.
Right.
It skews people's perceptions of the choices in the world. And we in the House of Satan thrive on choice, as General Motors does, let's say.
Yeah.
Let
me, while you mention that, is the recall of 28 million cars by General Motors, is that some of Satan's work?
We did some faulty ignition research down here. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
We do all kinds of research. I mean, we probably have the biggest research budget this side of the Department of Defense in
wow.
the country.
Wow.
And, actually, in truth, we co-fund a lot of projects with them.
What kind of...
Nothing you'd be interested in.
Okay. So getting back to the issue of this baptism service in the Anglican Church, what steps might the devil be taking to respond to this challenge?
Well, there's no might about it.
Mm.
My dad has hired a PR firm.
Really?
They're on the account as of yesterday, working overtime, I should say, to really spread the word of the devil and his works, so that no church in its right mind, of course, that's probably an oxymoron, no church in its right mind will ever again think about taking mention of the devil out of its any of its services. So, you'll see columns. You already heard in your report there that some people objected to the removal of the devil from that service.
Yes.
Those are our folks. We have them inside the church.
Really?
But there'll be much more subtle stuff because, as you know, my dad likes to work the subtle side of the street.
Yeah,
We think that's where the love is, really.
Mm. Speaking of the word love, I neglected to ask you at the start of the interview, who's your mom? The devil took a wife?
Let me just say again, we don't deal in the gossip and the tittle-tattle
down here. Yeah.
We deal in it, of course.
Yeah.
We produce reams of it daily
and
hours of it on television.
Sure.
But we don't actually let it get near to our private life.
Uh-huh.
But I'll just say this.
Yes.
Do you actually think that there's only one operation in the world that can engineer a virgin birth?
Never really thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's get back to the story.
Okay.
You said you had infiltrated members. Would these be clergy into the Church of England?
Well, you got gotta keep tabs on your competition. I mean, that's just basic. You know,
yeah.
we're not the NSA or anything, although God knows we'd love to be. We'd love to have that kind of technology at our fingertips, but we're a little old, as I said, we're a little old school down here, and we haven't quite, we have more trouble getting our computers to work, let's say, than the FBI.
Really?
But, you know, one of the things I'm working on, and Dad trusts me to whip that into shape, and literally whip that into shape.
I bet.
But, we have folks, you know, operating in all of the major denominations, all the big creeds around the world.
Yeah.
We got our fingers in those particular pies.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, just to keep tabs on what's going on.
Sure.
Because you got to... In this crazy competitive world, you got to know what the other side is doing.
Yeah.
But believe me, there is going to be such an outpouring of support for the devil. You are going to hear rock and roll songs praising the devil one more time.
Oh.
I think we've got some rappers involved. You know, they will endorse anything
sure.
if the money's right.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, you know, if it's vodka or if it's the devil, I don't think their management people really... have drawn that particular line.
All right, well,
and then, you know, you've seen that the Christians have been organizing Hollywood and getting some more Hollywood movies made that are sort of pro-religion.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to work on that end as well and just roll up our sleeves and see if we can get some big budget spectaculars happening next summer that pay tribute to the work of a certain evil genius that you and I both know.
Rupert Murdoch?
No, my dad.
Oh. And you wear sleeves, then?
That was just a metaphor.
Oh, all right.
But speaking of clothing, we do have a very major PR campaign that's about to break with, I think, Melbourne Fashion Week down in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
We have all of the major designers involved, and it's just a simple line that goes in all of their advertising and all of their materials. The devil is in the details.
Mm.
And we think that's you can't pay for... exposure like that, except, of course, we have.
Well, and you did.
Yeah.
And
also, we're working with the food industry to repopularize a lot of items, deviled eggs, deviled ham, just to get the name out there.
Yeah.
If the church is going to soft pedal a name, we're going to do everything we can to hard pedal it.
The devil, you say.
Exactly.
Satan Jr., Sammy Satan Jr., thank you for joining us on the Newsmaker line today. Good luck to you and your dad.
Thank you.
Give your dad, I guess, my worst regards.
I will.
And either of you is welcome anytime on the Newsmaker line here on the show. That's better.
In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up, you can almost touch the sky. When the weather is right, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, some fine digital work at work, at play here on the show. But now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Tax officials here in England were forced to apologize this week after... the government spending watchdog found that Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs had incorrectly claimed it was bringing in billions of pounds in extra tax.
discovery by the National Audit Office was an embarrassment for Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and led the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee of the Parliament to question how tax inspectors could expect the public to file their own tax reforms returns correctly when the tax office was making such errors. HMRC had reported it exceeded its performance targets by almost £2 billion in 2011-2012 and more than £2 billion in 2012-2013. The error arose because tax officials had set the baseline to measure their performance too low when it began the measurement process. Now to the Facebook story, which I'm sure most of you know. The author responsible for the latest Facebook psychology experiment has apologized for any anxiety that may have been inflicted on unwitting participants and for the way in which the research paper described the controversial experiment, conducted jointly by researchers from the University of California and Cornell University. The week-long Facebook study sought to find evidence of an emotional contagion that could be spread through social networking sites. In order to achieve this, a team of social scientists manipulated the news feed items of more than 689,000 Facebook users, dividing the subject into two subsets, those who were provided items that were mostly positive and those who were provided newsfeed items that were mostly negative. By the way, we're trying the same thing with this week's show. Half of you will hear a broadcast where that record didn't have digital problems. The study provided data that suggested a so-called emotional contagion could be transferred through social networks. The experiment sparked considerable outcry. Adam Kramer, one of the project's three research authors, said, "My co-authors and I are very sorry for the way the paper described the research and any anxiety it caused. In hindsight, the research benefits of the paper may not have justified all of this anxiety." Toronto Mayor Rob Ford returned to City Hall this week after a two-month stint in rehab, offering a public apology for his past behavior and asking for another opportunity as mayor of Toronto. In a news conference, Ford said he is, quote, ashamed and humiliated by some of the choices he made in the past. Quote, "I was wrong and I have no one to blame but myself," he said. "It was never my intention to embarrass the city or offend my fellow members of council. I deeply regret some of the personal choices I've made in the past." He also apologized to mayoral candidate Karen Stintz for the, quote, "hurtful and degrading remarks," unquote, he'd made about her. "I offer a deep felt apology for my behavior," he said. Stintz later released a statement. Quote, "If the mayor wants to apologize to me, he's got my number and he can call," unquote. She seems nice. Dayline Rio de Janeiro, Uruguay striker Luis Suarez apologized this week for biting Italy defender Giorgio Chiellini during that World Cup match, vowed there would never be a repeat of the incident, meaning I guess he's never going to bite that guy again. After initially denying that he bit Chiellini, Suarez issued a carefully worded statement admitting his offense and remorse for his actions. Quote, "After several days of being home with my family, I've had the opportunity to regain my calm and reflect on what occurred," he said in a statement that was published on his Twitter account. Quote, "Independent from the fallout and the contradicting declarations that have surfaced during these past few days, the truth is that my colleague Giorgio Chiellini suffered the physical result of a bite in the collision he suffered with me. For this, I deeply regret what happened. I apologize to Giorgio Chiellini and the entire football family," unquote. Nice use of the kind of the, not the passive voice, but sort of a suggestion that mistakes were made there. Nice work in the written statement by the footballer. Dayline Tulsa, Tennessee lawmakers have apologized to the Cherokee Nation for actions taken by President Andrew Jackson that forced up to 16,000 Cherokees off Tennessee lands 175 years ago. The Tennessee General Assembly passed House Joint Resolution 553 to commemorate the anniversary of the Trail of Tears. Two Cherokee officials attended the event, where leaders of federally recognized tribes were presented with copies of the resolution. Under the resolution, the Tennessee Assembly acknowledged the role played by the state that led to the Cherokees' homes and lands being confiscated before they were rounded up and removed to Indian territory beginning in 1838, where they could open casinos more than a century later. Following months of controversy, editors at the scientific journal Nature have retracted two high-profile studies that purported to demonstrate a quick and simple way of making flexible stem cells without destroying embryos or tinkering with DNA. Several critical errors have been found in our article and letter, Nature wrote in a retraction statement issued Wednesday, We apologize for the mistakes. Michelle Berto, morning anchor for Atlanta CBS affiliate WGCL, has apologized for using the term colored woman during Monday morning's newscast. She had several African-American women on to demonstrate hair care tips for summertime when she said, quote, "Let me tell you something. I'm not a colored woman, but I have kinky hair just like her," referring to a local hair care expert. She apologized on air the next morning, saying, quote, "Yesterday I made a pretty insensitive remark during one of our segments here on Better Mornings Atlanta. I apologize once again. I truly want to say from the bottom of my heart that I really am sorry about that comment I made in reference to my hair color, but I used an inappropriate term," unquote. No reaction yet from the National Association for the Advancement of African Americans. Instagram has removed a photo of a gay newlywed couple kissing. Alberto Guzman posted a photo of him and his husband, Janeiro Bofill, from their wedding day to celebrate Pride. The image was posted alongside several equal rights hashtags, but then the photo was flagged as inappropriate and removed by Instagram. Instagram's community guidelines state users are banned from sharing images that include nudity or mature content. Now Instagram has apologized for the mistake and restored the photo. "We wrongly removed content and rectified the error as soon as we were notified. We apologize for any inconvenience. It was part of a study." No, it wasn't. Although Instagram is owned by Facebook, beware. A popular cafe in Sydney, Australia, apologized to its customers and Facebook fans after posting what many consider to be an offensive new dessert from the cafe's secret menu. The latest dessert, the Diabetes Cronut, had a photo was posted and a status to its Facebook page. The dessert was a jam cronut with peanut butter ice cream and dulce de leche drenched in espresso. The post elicited outrage, including a thread of varying degrees of angry comments from Facebook users. The cafe deleted its status and issued an apology to its fans, announcing the cronut is no longer on the menu. "Didn't mean to offend anyone. Sorry that we have. We apologize for our poor taste in this instance." Dateline Los Angeles American Apparel issued a public apology after the company posted a stylized picture to its Tumblr page of the space shuttle Challenger disaster. The company was immediately hammered with negative feedback, and its apology, the company said, it was an honest mistake by its social media manager, who was born after the explosion that killed all seven crew members. "We sincerely regret the insensitivity of that selection. The post has been deleted." Hire older people. And following a week-long brouhaha over the appointment of anti-gay activist Timothy Bush to lead the Napa 4th of July parade, Bush has apologized to the LGBT community and will remain as the parade's Grand Marshal. The apology is the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We only have time for a couple of more items in the area of what the frack? A new study explains how just four wells forcing massive amounts of drilling wastewater into the ground are probably shaking up Oklahoma. Apropos of earthquakes, this is an energy source not threatened by earthquakes, but possibly causing them, or probably causing them. Those wells seem to have triggered more than 100 small to medium earthquakes in the past 5 years, according to a study published this week by the journal Science. Science. Many of the quakes were much farther away from the wells than expected. Combined, these wells daily pour more than 5 million gallons of water a mile or two underground into rock formations, the study found. That buildup of fluid creates more pressure that, quote, has to go somewhere, said the study's lead author, seismologist Katie Karenin of Cornell. Is that the same university that had the Facebook research? They're doing well. Researchers originally figured the water diffused through underground rocks slowly, but instead it is moving faster and farther and triggers quake fault lines that already were likely or ready to move, she said. And two retirees from the Pennsylvania Department of Health say its employees were silenced on the issue of Marcellus shale fracking drilling. Two retirees, one veteran employee says she was instructed not to return phone calls from residents who expressed health concerns about natural gas development. "We were absolutely not allowed to talk to them," said Tammy Stuck, a community health nurse. Another retired employee, Marshall Deasy, confirmed that they weren't allowed to talk to people who complained about possible health effects from what the frack.
Shh. He's not like...
He's not a nothing. And finally, on today's broadcast, the Pentagon has grounded all 79 F-35 fighter jets because of concerns arising from its probe of a runway fire that forced a pilot to abort takeoff in Florida. They're checking out the root cause. The root causists. It's already the costliest weapon system in U.S. history, almost $400 billion for 2,500 of the aircraft planned for production. It's been plagued by a series of software and hardware problems, including bulkhead cracks. Cost has risen 70%. Defense analysts say some of the problems are the result of starting to manufacture the high-tech jet fighters while its design was still being completed. Sounds like the missile defense program, doesn't it? It's a pattern. Or a system. It's a lovely record, that recording of In the Summertime by Judith Owen. And your copy, well, it won't be played on the same crappy CD machine that mine was. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. For NPR stations throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, kcsn.org and harryshearer.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at wwno.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And it'd be just like having three CD machines that work if you'd agree to join with me then. Will you? Already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, Jenny Lawson at WWNO, and Adrian Bodnam here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard or almost heard here on available at harryshearer.com, as are Cars I Talk t-shirts. The show, written and performed by yours truly, Harry Shearer, is produced by Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. I'm going to go out and breathe me some Oxford Street. So long from London.